Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by John Gibbs. He runs a YouTube channel called Dr. Know-It-All. He's been on my channel a few times. He covers Tesla, AI, Tesla's FSD, and Optimus. He's come out with some great videos of late. And I wanted to invite John back on the show to talk about Tesla's next generation, perhaps $25,000 car that they've been talking about. John, welcome back. How have you been?
I've been great. It's wonderful to be back on the channel again, and I hope you've been doing well as well. I hear you've been traveling some, and I guess you're in California now. Is that correct?
Yes, in California this week, next week in Mexico, in 2 weeks back in Texas, so making the rounds.
Wow.
Yeah. Awesome. John, the reason why I wanted to bring you on and talk about the next generation Tesla vehicle is because you made a video kind of reflecting on your design ideas that you had a few years ago about the robotaxi. And I thought it was actually super impressive. And I was wanted to show my audience and the Tesla community more about your design and your ideas. So I figure let's take this format. Let's first set the context of why this is important. Second, we'll review your designs. And then third, let's go into why you chose some of the decisions that you did. So first off, the context of why this is important. So Elon Musk at the last conference call, earnings conference call, he said that Tesla is done with the Cybertruck design. They're done with the Semi design. Now they're focused on the next generation platform design. And this is going to be, he says, they're aiming for half the cost, half the effort, half the factory floor space, twice the output, some crazy, crazy ambitious claims here. And I think if Tesla meets these expectations or even gets close, it's going to be a complete game changer. I don't think many people are really understanding the ramifications of a car that's half the price, right, of a Model 3 and Model Y right now. But first off, what are your kind of general thoughts on this? Like, how important is this next generation platform?
Well, I mean, I don't think it can be overstated how important this next generation platform is. And whether or not they sell this to the public, and I'm still not absolutely convinced they really will ever sell this car, because I think that what they would rather do is they would rather own this and as a fleet and rent it and stuff. But whatever it is, whether they sell it and they sell in the tens of millions, or whether they keep it as a fleet and they operate it themselves and just make even more money out of that, it's going to be a massive part of this. And in the medium term, I think, like, we're talking Cybertruck comes next, and then Optimus eventually will be absolutely huge. But in that intermediate area, this Model 2, or it's not going to be called a Model 2, but it's just convenient to talk about it that way. But that's going to be the real, that's going to be the moneymaker in the medium term for sure.
Yeah. Definitely. Let's go ahead and jump into your design ideas that you had from a few years ago. And we'll go ahead and check them out right now.
Well, you can see this takes a lot of cues from the Cybertruck. The most obvious one is that it's a stainless steel body, and it's the sort of exoskeleton idea. But I guess the next most obvious thing is that you've got passengers sitting in a front back sort of configuration. And the reason why I wanted to go that direction was because I was thinking, what could be the most compact shape that you could fit four passengers in it? Now, again, this is just my concept of this. But the reason why I ended up sort of resurrecting this video and talking about it recently was because of your conversation with James Dauma, because he started talking about, oh, this needs to be stainless steel. It needs to not have paint. It needs to be all of these things in order to fulfill Elon Musk's mission. You know, what Elon said he was basically saying, look, we have to have everything. We have to make this very, very simple to make. And if you have complex shapes and you have paint that's necessary and you have many different models, then all of those things increase the cost and complexity of building this. So what's the absolutely simplest thing to make? It would be this. And then, you know, at the time there wasn't really, let's see if I can do like a kind of semi-transparent thing here. But so here you've got, like, you know, kind of being able to see through what's going on. At the time there were no structural battery packs 2 years ago, and there wasn't the single piece casting at that time either. But at this point, I think that this car, at least something like this size, could potentially be made in one single casting, like the whole bottom part. And I was saying in my recent video where I was talking about this that the battery could be a structural battery pack that would be placed into a relatively thin middle layer, because what you would just create something that you were stamping out that just had enough structure so it would hold together and not warp while you were building it. But then you would put the batteries in it, put the foam sealant in it, put the top on it, and the whole middle part would become extremely rigid at that point. And then the front and back pieces are executed the same as something like a Model 3 or something like that. As I look at this, I'm like, yes, this is a really fantastic design. I don't know. The big thing that I found out feedback from people when I showed them this is I don't think people are going to want to ride backwards in a car. I disagree with that because people ride backwards in buses. They ride backwards in trains. They ride backwards in jump seats in cars. If you ever get like those third row seats sometimes that like the kids sit backwards in, so there is a precedent for that. But the big reason for this was that I wanted to get rid of that sort of, every time you have a mini car, it just looks like it has a front that goes like this and then the back is a straight drop off. Mm. And number one, that's wasted space. But number two, it's just aerodynamically incredibly inefficient. So this becomes a much more efficient shape to make this. And I guess I didn't capture from this angle, you've got a single motor here. And there's, you can see crumple zones and things. I put in run flat tires. I don't know if they would do that. I think if it's a robotaxi, they probably would, just so that they wouldn't have to ever have it, have it at the side of the road. It could keep going. But I think that this is a reasonable attempt at a design. And you would only have to ever make one of these. There's, you can have any color you want as long as it's stainless steel gray. No two motors. No performance variation. It's what it is. So you can see, and the people in here, they're just human models. They're like mannequins. So they're there for reference to get a sense of the scale of the vehicle. But let me see if I can find the layer that has, let's see, this one. Yeah. Okay. So, obviously this is very crude, but, and I had this as a vertical thing. That's a mistake. It would definitely be horizontal at this point. But the idea would be that there would be a single motor in the front. You've got all of your, electronics and everything. And then the battery is underneath. And the purple part here is the luggage. So what you're doing is you're trading the luggage space off between putting it in the back of the car and putting it in the middle of the car. And if I open up the body again, you'll see that the doors are actually relatively symmetrical. So you would enter, the door would actually open backwards for the people, going into the back seat, which would make it easy to put in luggage in between the two seats. And then there would also be a hatchback back here. So nice big view, but there's a hatchback back here, so you can open it up. So essentially what would happen is, and my idea is that the seats don't fold down on top of each other. You actually can slide the seats forward and do like this. So you can actually create a very flat, very large space in the back if you need to for hauling. So it's a fairly,
Can you rotate that to the front? So right now we're the back, right? Yeah. So let's go to the front.
And this is the front. I thought the kind of side.
Oh, that's the front.
Yeah, this is the front here.
Okay, can you go to the back? Oh, okay, that's the front. So the front is the white headlights and the back is the red.
Right.
Okay, got it.
So the back is just the red bar and the front is the white. But I thought it would look kind of cool to have the Cybertruck like bar.
Yeah.
And then actually I have, I believe I put in a little bit of like white trim on the sides, but just for fun. So the idea would be that maybe you'd have like a little white bars on the side, but probably that would be illegal. The other thing you'll notice is that I've gotten rid of the, there's no side view mirrors.
Yeah.
Hopefully at some point Tesla and other companies will be allowed to not have to have side view mirrors. So
yeah, makes sense. All right. So, let's go into some of the design decisions, your thought processes on why you chose what you did. So first off, it seems like the most significant might be the folded stainless steel. That allows, right. I think, first, the removal of the paint shop and all the paint processes, which is huge. Second, it removes some of the stamping presses for the body panels. What can you kind of dive into more of that decision? Are there any other benefits? Are there any other cons that we're not looking at here?
Well, I think again, if they can manage, it depends on the size of this, and I don't know if they can, but if they can manage a single piece underbody casting, think about, like, I mean, you get rid of like so many, you know, he's talking about half the processes. That would get rid of a lot of the processes. You don't even have to attach anything together. You just stamp it out, fill it with batteries and go. But I think if you think about body panels, they're useless. They're not structural. Like the traditional aluminum body panel on the outside of a car. They're not structural. They don't do anything for the car. They're just kind of hung onto the car to make it look attractive. And when you're talking about, especially if with the robotaxi idea and people don't actually own these vehicles, who do you care whether your yellow cab, you know, what does it matter what it looks like, or even honestly what your Uber looks like or anything? So you know, people don't care so much about what something like that looks like. They just care that it gets them from point A to point B. And so the getting rid of the pretty, I think, what was it James said? He said your pride and joy, right? You know, my Tesla Model Y is kind of like that. It's very precious to me. I don't want anybody to dent it, which is another advantage, by the way. But you know, but like when you don't own the vehicle and you're only using it for transportation, you don't have that sort of, I want this to look super attractive thing. So I think they can just completely scrap the aesthetics aspect and go with form follows function. And so, yeah, I think that's a major advantage, and that allows them, I mean, think about how many fewer parts they have by doing that. It's just every single one of those panels is stuff you don't even need to create at all, and paint and all of that other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot less probably, you know, welding, putting the panels onto the car.
Right.
What other, kind of challenges do you think? I mean, I'm guessing with Cybertruck, they're going to be looking to, you know, hash out some of the hiccups they have with the stainless steel, but hopefully they'll be able to really nail that. Are you anticipating any challenges Tesla might have with stainless steel?
That's going to be interesting, because I think one of the problems with stainless steel is it's very, very strong. So, I don't know if they've dealt with NHTSA yet, but the whole idea of regulatory, like there has to be crumple zones and stuff. So that's a whole thing. That's an engineering thing. I'm sure they can figure that out. But the actual manufacture of the steel is going to be, I imagine, a pretty reasonable challenge to do at scale. Because they're going to need pretty big machines, and they're going to have to be pretty precise in terms of the angles that they fold them in. And they may have to do some sort of pre-machining to create sort of like, you know, areas where they will bend automatically, or, you know, favor that the bend at that particular point. So I imagine those are all significant challenges. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know about when they announced this car, but certainly before they produce this car, they're going to have made 500,000 to a million Cybertrucks probably. Right. So if they do a design with stainless steel, and they've got the Cybertruck ramped up and working, there's no reason why they couldn't they couldn't have this working. It just seems like that would be a process that would actually be easier on a smaller car than a bigger car. There's less of it that they have to deal with. So
It seems like the Cybertruck is kind of like the warm up this next generation robotaxi. Like, the Cybertruck is cool, but it's got a limited market, you know, mostly North America, mostly truck market. We're probably maxing out at somewhere between 300 to 500,000 vehicles per year with Cybertruck, maybe.
Right.
But so it doesn't move the needle completely in terms of Tesla's long-term future, but this next generation platform, I mean, how many cars do you foresee, you know, Tesla being able to sell on this smaller, cheaper platform?
Well, so I don't think $25,000 is reasonable anymore given inflation, but let's say $30,000 instead. Sure. But you're looking at, what's the cheapest Model 3 right now? It's pretty close to $50,000, right? So, and you look at exponential increase in demand as you drop the price linearly. So I think it'll be as many as they can make. I mean, 10 million a year would not be at all surprising if they can make this thing if they could sell it for like $29,999 or something like that, right? So if they can come in just under $30,000, I think they could easily sell 10 million of these vehicles. Without a question.
So it seems like one of the most controversial parts of your design is this rear-facing seats, right?
Yes.
And I totally understand the idea, because if you put the people's heads in the middle, then you can kind of shape the car more aerodynamically. Right. If you stick them in the back, then the back has to be higher, which compromises that aerodynamics. And I think Tesla does have like this really strong fixation, focus, priority on aerodynamics. I remember when the Model Y came out, and I was hoping for it to look a little more boxy at the end, like a typical SUV.
Right.
And I remember at some Tesla event, I was asking Franz about why he didn't make it just even a little bit more aerodynamic or more boxy, right?
Right.
And he was like basically saying that Tesla is so focused on aerodynamics. It's crazy. Right. Like every minute thing they can do to get eke out a little bit more on aerodynamics, they'll do. And so he was basically saying, like, you know, it's very purposely built or designed, right, to have the best design for the best aerodynamics. And I think, you know, that's interesting. And that's where, like, I think most people might discount your design with the rear-facing seats. But if you look at it through the lens of pure aerodynamics, it could make sense. And the second thing, which is interesting, is if it's a robotaxi, mostly used for robotaxi. I don't know if they'll sell it, but if they use it for robotaxi, most of the rides will be probably one or two people. And so they'll sit in the front probably. And so the rear will be used probably, I don't know, less than 25% of the time, or you know, for the third and fourth passengers. So it's less.
Which might often be children in that case, and children don't care.
Yeah.
Children are happy to ride whichever way they want to, right? So that doesn't matter. Yeah.
That's a pro. I mean, on the other side, I think Tesla could, you know, do forward-facing rear seats. It would change your design to make it more, you know, higher on the back, lose some aerodynamics, but it could be more comfortable. But I don't, it's not a, it is a change, but I don't know if it's the biggest, most important difference or change.
No, the big thing in my mind, and I was designing this around the 2013 Mini Cooper. I wanted it to be the same dimensions as that. And that's a very small car.
Yeah.
And it has two back seats. So, you know, this might honestly be something that would be sold like this in Europe. Or in other areas of the world where they care a lot more about the size of the vehicle, because this vehicle is really compact. Yeah. It's substantially smaller than in terms of like the length of it. It's substantially smaller than a Model 3 and Model Y. So it's to make it as short as. But so if you then had a version that you could stretch out, right? So it's like you could have the same basic idea and still have the back end go like this and have the hatchback sort of thing. But if it was more stretched out, you could put the back seats front facing in that case. So I could see two versions of this, one with a more stretched out middle part and one with a really compact middle part. In the whole sort of design idea of this was, how inexpensively could you make this car? So you got to have the dimensions small, so you have less materials, you only have one model, there's no choices, everything is just, you know, the same thing, and the stainless steel gets rid of the paint shop and gets rid of the body panels and all of that stuff that you have to build. So that was the really strong motivation in my mind. But if you were like, okay, we need one for the American market that's bigger, and because people just like bigger cars in the US market, in the North American market, right? So, you know, if you did that, then sure, you could have one that had front-facing seats, but still had the kind of wing across the back of it to create that aerodynamic shape.
It's interesting. I mean, the size of this next generation platform, like, will it be on this really small, kind of like, you know, this Mini Cooper size, or will it be a little bit bigger, maybe in between that and a Model 3? I guess for North America, you probably want to go a little bit bigger. The rest of the world, you know, they might prefer, or they don't care, you know, in terms of size.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look in China, they have the most popular EV is the Wuling Mini, and that thing is like, I'm not really exaggerating by that much, right? It's like you can barely fit in that car as an adult human being. So there would be a lot of places that would be perfectly happy to have a car like that, that would have, because this is the other thing that I really wanted was the flexibility for it, not just to be used as a passenger vehicle, but also as a kind of cargo hauling vehicle. So, you know, having the hatchback in the back and having the seats be able to fold flat, that was also a really important part of the design, because I feel like, especially if it's a robotaxi, you really want it to be flexible. Because, you know, like if you don't own a car anymore and you want to go to Home Depot and get a couple of buckets of paint and some paintbrushes and some other, you know, right? You might have a bunch of stuff that you need to put in the back of this vehicle. So as opposed to carrying, and I was also thinking, I was like, well, my goodness, why would you even have to go to Lowe's? You could just call, you know, you go online and you figure out what you want to order, send the car there to pick up the stuff and have it delivered to your house. So you wouldn't even have to leave the house. You know, if that kind of thing worked out, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay. So, in terms of rollout, so when you see this next generation platform, let's say Tesla designs it, they're designing it right now, let's say into 2023, usually it doesn't take, you know, more than probably, you know, what, 1 to 2 years for Tesla to design, you know, new vehicles. Right. And so let's say by the end of next year, they're wrapping up their design of this new vehicle. And let's say they could hypothetically start production by the end of 2024, and ramp in 2025. What do you think they will add a steering wheel or have no steering wheel? Like, see, one avenue is you say, okay, let's add a steering wheel and let's add a steering wheel and let's sell it as a passenger vehicle to people, right? So they could drive and eventually go robo-taxi. Another angle is say, let's use it as a fleet vehicle and only roll it out to jurisdictions and places where we own, you know, the car and everything. And I guess you still probably would need steering wheel for the time being, you know? Probably. It depends. But the idea would be more of a slower rollout maybe where you go only, you scale accordingly to how you scale robotaxi, right? It's really just all in on full self-driving versus this other option is let's sell it also, you know, as a passenger vehicle and sell millions to people. Right? What's your kind of take on those two type of options there?
Well, I can tell you the way that I would do it, but I can tell you that Tesla doesn't think the way I do. I'm a very conservative person in general. And so I would be like, build it with the steering wheels and like ramp it up slowly and do all of that kind of stuff. And you know, hedge your bets and play safe. But anybody who knows any of Elon Musk's companies, that is not the way he rolls. I mean, the whole Twitter saga right now is he's just like dumping money into a very risky situation. So I just wouldn't be surprised at all. And I'm thinking that's one of the reasons they haven't announced this vehicle yet, because it's been several years and they could have easily said this is what it is. But I think that the design keeps changing. I have a feeling that some Skunk Works place that they have a bunch of these things that they've made and they're like, could this do this? But that they don't really want to commit to a final design until they know if full self-driving is going to work. You know, like let's say that.
Or when it's going to work. Like they know it's going to work.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when it's going to work. Okay. Something like that. But let's say that tomorrow Alameda, California says, we're going to allow full self-driving rides. Like autonomous rides where the person in the vehicle is not responsible for the vehicle anymore. If that happened and it was successful for a few months, that's the point at which I believe that Tesla would go like, here's our design. Because then they would know, they'd say like, okay, now it's just a question of scaling it out to everybody else agreeing to this. But you know, it's also Tesla. So, I mean, maybe March 15th of 2023, they're just going to go for it and announce this thing and say, yep, this is what we're going to do. And in 2 years, we'll have this car and it's not going to have a steering wheel and hope for the best, you know, hope that everything works that way. I don't know. That's just what Tesla is. What Tesla is, what SpaceX, it's what all these companies do. They go for it.
Yeah.
You just see what's going to happen.
You think that like typically with cars, you go the conservative route, but Elon is and Tesla is different.
As he says, success is one of the possible outcomes. So there you go.
Do you think they'll have different versions of this? Like, I mean, your design is kind of centered more on this, you know, bare bones, you know, stainless steel, single motor, just one variant, right? Which makes sense. But do you think they would have like a robo-taxi version that's like that, stainless steel, and then a passenger version that, I don't know. But the thing is, if stainless steel is like that much cheaper and more durable, would there even be a use case, for, you know, steel body panels?
And I mean, again, think of how durable this car is. If you were purchasing a car, if somebody said you can drive a literal million miles on this car and it's not going to rust, you're not going to have dings when people like, you know, smack their doors into it or when stuff falls off trucks in front of you. If it has that bulletproof glass like the Cybertruck does, I mean, this thing's going to be pretty indestructible if it's built that way. So Tesla could easily sell those cars. And I think that is a good way of hedging their bets. So what I could see is perhaps China might make one model and Berlin might make one model or someplace in Europe. You know, they might open a new factory, and then America, North America might make one model. And they, those three might not be identical to each other. But let's say if you lived in the United States and you wanted the ultra compact car for less money, you could get one imported from Shanghai. And then Europe, they would make one that was tailored. I mean, they've talked about this before, so it's not like I'm going off the rails here, but all based on the same basic shape. And so it's like, okay, so this one's a little more stretched out. This one's a little thinner, a little skinnier, so it will fit into like really narrow streets and small parking places. So that I could definitely see that they might have sort of like three geographical ones. And then if you wanted one that was from outside of that area, you would have to import them, but that would be a relatively small percentage of vehicles that people would purchase.
Yeah, yeah. Taking a step back, how close do you think Tesla is to releasing FSD in a robotaxi where there is no human driving? Do you have a kind of a timeline that you're estimating or guesstimating?
Well, I've called the end of 2022 a lot of times, but now that's a technology demonstration state. So Full Self-Driving 11, which just apparently popped out for a few employees at this point, but that's a pretty major thing. So I think, you know, I think realistically I need to dial it back by about 6 months at this point, because it's been a lot slower than I thought it was going to be this year. But let's say, so the middle of 2023, so like 2023, once they have the technology in place, there's still going to be a period of time before they have enough data to show regulators that this is safe. Yeah. So I think that'll be a big thing. And I also think I think Tesla's insurance has a big role to play in that. I can't remember who I was talking to, but there was a person I was talking to about this several months ago. And I was saying, I don't know if regulators are going to do it. And he said to me, he was like, look, this is all about insurance. He's like, if somebody is there and willing to pony up the bucks if there's an accident, it's going to be okay. Now, it could be a public relations disaster too, but in terms of the actual regulatory framework, he's like, as soon as insurance companies, and Tesla has its own insurance company and they're data driven, as soon as they feel like this is safe enough that it's going to cost them less than the policies would cost, then they can just, you know, they can fire it up and they can pressure somebody in the United States or someplace is going to want to be first, because it's kind of a big deal. I was saying, you know, I always throw out Tulsa, Oklahoma. I have no idea why, but you know, some city is going to be like, we want to be the first ones. We'll probably in Arizona. I think they're very, very loose about their regulations, but anyway, somebody's going to want to be first. So they'll allow it to happen.
Clarify what you mean by 6 months out. Like, what do you expect Tesla's FSD beta to be at? Are you saying that Tesla in 6 months or so can, the FSD car can drive safer than an average human, or even significantly safer than an average human without a human? That's pretty aggressive. The timeline is kind of surprising, because I'm expecting kind of further out, but what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had originally said end of 2022, so I'm extending it. But again, it's not that they're going to have regulatory approval for this, but that the car... So if Tesla can collect data, which doesn't include humans intervening, so I don't know how many drives you do that you don't intervene at all. I hardly do any, because most of the time I take over because I get like annoyed because it's not quite going fast enough or doing something like that. Yeah. So it's not usually a safety issue. But if Tesla can put together like complete rides, so this person drove 5 miles through city traffic, did a bunch of left-hand turns that were unprotected. If they can collect a bunch of data that shows that, and then you can do an apples-to-apples comparison, right? You can't do that if the person can intervene at any point, but if they can prove like this entire drive was done with no interventions, which should happen more and more frequently, the better the software gets, because we humans don't go like, oh crap, I better take over. Yeah. But once they have complete drives and a significant number of those, and they can prove statistically that there's, you know, there's a statistical significance. I was saying one standard deviation above the average human driver. But, you know, you take the average human driver just in terms of accident rate, things like that, and you prove statistically that Tesla vehicles are driving safer than that, then regulators will approve it. So what I'm saying is somewhere around the middle of 2023 now that we're going to get to the point where they can start collecting that data to prove that. And of course, the software will keep improving, so it should keep getting better and better. So that's what I'm saying. It's the beginning of that process should be able to happen by then.
Okay. Okay. I want to clarify this a little bit more. So
absolutely.
So I've been thinking about this framework of like, you take the average 15-20 minute city drive. Of course, right, it varies greatly, but let's just say, you know, in the middle average. Right now, I feel in my personal experience that I could do good two or three intervention-free drives on average, there's like an intervention. So maybe there's an intervention every like 2 to 4 drives for me, right?
Right.
Like, and I think what Tesla needs to do is the next kind of big jump, and this is a big jump from a year ago, like it was hard to do like even one intervention-free drive in an average city environment, right? You could do like an easy environment. But so this is a huge jump. I think the next step is Tesla, I think this happens next year where Tesla gets to 10 to 100 intervention-free drives in a row on average, like, you know, 15-20 minutes average city drive. And I think that's going to be a huge jump. People are going to notice it big time, but I think it's still far off.
And I think that the moment when it can do that is still far off.
No. I think it's next year we do that.
Okay.
I think it's still that level of safety and driving is still very far off from a robotaxi. And the reason why I say that is I think the next level is 100 to 1,000 drives that you could do without an intervention, right? And let's say an average drive is, you know, 10 miles or so. That's basically, you know, if you do one intervention per 1,000 drives, that's about one intervention for every 10,000 miles. To me, that's getting to the level where we need to be at to really start proving out that. And it all depends on how safely you can manage that one intervention out of 1,000 drives, right? If it's catastrophic, then that's not good, right? But if you can manage that one intervention out of 1,000 drives in a safe way most of the time, like 95 or 99% of the time, then you get this statistic of, okay, maybe one out of every 100 interventions, there's an accident. So then you could, you know, you can make
and
a
you're looking at hundreds of thousands of miles between
which eventually you're going to need, you're going to have to show a better accident rate than, you know, the average human, but, you know, better than that. So I don't see this. I mean, this, I hear this like, oh, next year. But to me, next year is a big jump, but it's still far from the 1,000 intervention-free drives in a row that we need.
So there's a couple of things. Number one, of course, is that we have to be careful to separate out like intervention-free regular drivers versus robo-taxis. Because I think you're right that the standard for robo-taxi is going to be much higher than hands-free driving, or not even hands-free, but just basically you're not responsible for the vehicle, but you still are in the driver's seat. Like maybe you're required to be in the driver's seat and it would give you a 10-second warning and be like, "Beep, beep, you know, start paying attention now," something along those lines. So I think that that could certainly happen first, right? Before the, because when a robotaxi, nobody's responsible for the car and nobody's in the driver's seat, might not have a steering wheel. That would be a problem. So that could happen much earlier. But the other thing about robotaxis is, consider what's the town? Is it Chandler, Arizona?
Or
something like that, right? So you've got a town that's a grid. It's just a square grid. Yeah. It's sunny all the time. Between the hours of X and Y, so take away rush hour traffic, you know, kind of like what Cruise and what Waymo have done. They, you know, they started off being able to do their drives at very specific hours in very specific geofenced areas. I don't see, you know, if you get this car up to being able to do in those circumstances, that's easy driving for these things, right? Straight lines, really good visibility, hardly ever any bad weather, you know, and probably you're going 3 or 4 miles or something between pickup and drop off. So it doesn't have to be like everything everywhere all at once, right? You don't have to be able to do all of that. So I agree with you that in order for Tesla just to have sort of blanket approval in a country, it would have to have something like 500,000 to a million miles between accidents. But I think it could do the easy stuff.
Yeah. So my kind of grid here is the intervention. If you can do an average of 10 to 100 trips intervention free,
right.
It's a great driving aid, but it's not safe enough to put on the streets without a human driver overseeing.
Right.
That's my kind of my grid. From 100 to 1,000 intervention-free drives on average, I think that's the stage where you can start experimenting on kind of safer neighborhoods or jurisdictions, and you have to learn how to manage certain interventions. That's kind of this gray area where you could perhaps start to experiment if you choose to, if you want to, right? Or you could wait, you know, later on where it gets safer and safer, because every 6 months, this thing is going to get a lot, you know, safer. Right? So it's like, I even wonder a question like, do they even need to, you know, focus on easier jurisdictions? Maybe they try it for a couple places just to kind of, you know, hash out their app and their logistics and different things like that.
Right.
But if every 6 months there's going to be a, you know, a jump in terms of significant safety, then I don't know if it's worth it. But it seems to me this around, I don't know what it is, but I think 100 intervention drives in a row is still too low to, if you know, release it in most environments, obviously. Right. But I don't think we're going to get there in the next year.
No, not 100, not by any chance.
Yeah.
But the other thing is like the failure mode on those drives. Yeah. Like that's the other thing that people don't talk about a lot, but it's like, what does the Tesla vehicle do when it, because inevitably, even we humans end up in situations sometimes where we're like, oh crap, you know, and you pull over to the side of the road or you do something, right? There's a graceful failure mode that humans have. And I think that Tesla would have to demonstrate that too.
Yeah.
It's like when it goes out of spec, when it doesn't know what it's doing anymore, here's what it's going to do. These are the steps it will take to get itself out of that situation. And even if that means just pulling over and parking and turning on the hazard lights, that's okay, right? As long as it's in a safe place.
The problem I have with the failure mode kind of angle is I think theoretically that was like the idea of, it felt like in kind of legacy autonomous driving kind of paradigm and thought that was, you have level 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, once you get to 4, you get these graceful failover modes where, you know, the car can drive and, you know, pull over, do something, alert the driver or something, take over, et cetera. but in actually driving, right, FSD beta on the streets, there's a good amount of situations that you only have a second, you know,
or less than a second.
Yeah. It's like you're turning onto a street and it just is making the wrong move, or something's happened where you need that, you know, less than a second of reaction time. And I don't see how you have a failover mode if you have, you know, half of a second to avoid an accident.
Well, I mean, it would have to be beyond that.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have to be beyond the state where it made really dumb mistakes like
but
that.
The thing is,
and I completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's actually a good portion of the mistakes. I don't know how you can ever be rid of those type of mistakes completely. Like that compromises a decent portion of the mistakes, right, FSD makes. So that's my I guess doubt of this whole, I mean, I think there will be needed a fail, you know, safe failover mode where you can safely, you know, for example, if it's smog or too much rain, or you know, you can
actually you
pull over and say, we can't do this, right? But I don't know, I mean, there seems to be a decent amount of cases where you need FSD just needs to be good. It needs to be really, really good.
Well, and I think there's, I mean, whatever the timeline is, whether we talk about 6 months or 6 years or something, it's going to progress in terms of, and I think one of the reasons when you look at the release notes is that Tesla a lot of times is worrying about smoothness and making sure that it's good for the driver, because what they want is fewer intervention drives, right? It's good for them too, because that way they can show data. Because a lot of times what will happen is I always harp on the midterm planner, which is like that 20 to 30 second thing where it doesn't get into the correct lane that it needs to be in. And then it's like, and I will often disengage and just go into the lane, cause I'm like, I don't want to have it miss its turn. Cause you know, so those are just interventions that once Tesla can prevent those and make me as a driver more comfortable that it's going to get into the right lane, it's going to do the right things, it will, then they can start to rack up these intervention free drives. I think right now, unless I'm specifically filming a video, I'm just like, nah, I'd rather take over. You know, it's not worth the, I've done a couple of videos where the cars missed a turn, had to go around like a neighborhood and come back out. You know, it's like kind of ridiculous. And it's like, nah, I really don't want to do that when I'm commuting to work in the morning. So, So there's a lot of interventions that aren't even critical ones, but Tesla can't prove that they've got intervention-free drives until they get rid of those stupid things. Then, you know, it also does stuff where it makes a turn and then it's like, whoops, wrong lane, and it switches lanes in the middle of the turn or something. So,
I noticed version 11, some of the release notes were leaked. Before we recorded, you said you had looked through them a bit. Or you had done a video actually on it. So is there anything like, what's the big takeaway for version 11? Is there any big step change on like one specific thing, or is it just kind of myriad of different smaller things?
Well, the problem is, okay, so Not a Tesla App released there's two notes that are part of a picture. Mm-hmm. And those are, I mean, 99% sure that those are true. But then they released a bunch of other ones. I did the video and I talked about all of them. And then somebody said, hey, that's version 10.11. So it was actually old. So the first two. So if you watch my video, the first two things, which is like half the video, is accurate. But I don't know, like there's, I'm sure many, many more release notes, but the big one of course is that they've moved from a 4-year-old legacy stack on the highway to the full self-driving stack. So and it even says in the release notes, it's like, this thing was like single frame stuff in the image space, like all of the stuff that they've been talking about. Think about it. That's 2018. This was before AI. This was before autonomy day. You know, we're talking about ancient stuff here. So that's the big step change.
Got it.
Is that the highway, anything on interstates, you know, what do they call that? Limited access roads or whatever, that, you know, you get on the merge lane, you get off the exit lane, but that should behave much, much better now.
Got it.
I hope we'll see. Yeah. Very few people have it at this point. So we'll find out.
Interesting. Lots of exciting things. I think, the full self-driving, kind of journey / progress has been super fascinating to watch. In real time, getting to test it out in your own vehicle, get to see the notes, see what they're working on, how they're approaching it, what areas they're trying to work on. You go back in your car, you drive it to see, you know, if it's improving or not and how it's improving. It's like, and we're in this age where this is like, we're in the middle of a crazy AI, you know, renaissance boom.
Yeah.
And for us to be able to be in the thick of it, actually testing out hands-on one of the most exciting technologies, it's quite fascinating.
I have to give a lot of props to Tesla. There's not a lot of companies that would do this.
Sure.
You know, and I really appreciate it. It's an amazing, like you say, it's an amazing experience. I think it's really worth, I know we're wrapping up, but it's worth noting one thing, which is that whenever 10 years from now, so 2032 or something, once this is a solved problem, it's going to be obvious how to solve it, but nobody knows how to solve it right now. Tesla is doing the best they can following the path that they think is right. But if you look at the past 3 or 4 years, they've changed tax a bunch of times. So it may be that this version is not the correct version either. And it may take another couple of years after that. So until the problem is solved, nobody knows how to solve it. So, you know, when people complain and they're like, oh, I wish this would work better or something, it's like, just remember, we don't have the benefit of jumping forward 10 years and going like, well, how did this work? And then jumping back in time, you know, that would be lovely if we could do that. But until then, we just don't know. And so it seems like Tesla's methodology is the best one and it has the by far the best chance of success. But until it's a solved problem, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like Tesla is doing the right approach based upon how they're progressing and improving. But even conceptually, like you get a ton of data from your fleet, you throw a ton of compute on it, and you have some of the smartest AI people, you know, basically try out a bunch of different ways to, you know, to improve a bunch of different things, and you're gonna, you know, get somewhere. But it's impressive that the speed at which Tesla is able to adapt and change their approach. So, you know, starting from just images to, you know, to videos, bird eye view, 3D reconstruction, all these different progressions. And they're doing it like in a year or something, you know, it's like flip their whole stack, right? Have to retrain everything. And it's just,
and that's, I actually did a video on Tesla's data engine and how insane it is because the whole thing is that they don't even store all the, you know, when they went from like the processed video in the cameras to the raw photon counts, they had to discard everything. And anybody who works in the AI space, that would give you like, you know, that'll turn your hair gray. You know, that's like, holy crap, I've spent all this time building this huge data set and now throw it away and start over again. That's terrifying. And most companies, a lot of researchers wouldn't do that, you know, so you just have to give Tesla a lot of props for being willing to do these kind of crazy things and try these different things and say, nope, that didn't work. Okay, what about this?
So the past, you know, few weeks, obviously Tesla stock price, Twitter, all this stuff is like, you know, all over the place. But so I have a friend who calls me occasionally whenever the stock price is really down because he owns Tesla stock a decent amount, but he doesn't follow the company religiously. He just kind of looks at some headlines occasionally. So he calls me and goes, Dave, what's going on with Tesla stock? Is it Twitter? is it like, what's going on? And then I'm like, you know, Elon did sell and you know, whatever, there's a bunch of stuff going on. Right. But, his whole thing is like, he's like, I wouldn't say he panics, but he gets emotional where he's like, should I sell? Should I sell? And so I'm like, I'm always telling him, you know, just chill for now. And, but I had to explain like, Tesla's doing like some crazy stuff with AI. And it's funny because I talked to him often too, or every 6 months when he panics, but he literally didn't know almost anything Tesla's doing with AI. And he's like, you mean they've improved autopilots, you know, since 4 or 5 years ago? I'm like, they're not just improving it. they have one of the most ambitious, you know, projects ever with physical real world AI. He's like, what do you mean? You know? And so I had to go back. I'm like, you know, all of Tesla's cars have their full self-driving computer. Even if they're not subscribed or purchased the FSD option, they're collecting data. And Tesla's able to send these triggers and, you know, they have hundreds, if not thousands of triggers where they're looking for these really difficult edge cases where the cars can, you know, capture those edge cases in video, send them back to headquarters. Headquarters will then take these video clips, do this 3D reconstruction on a supercomputer, label all of the objects and things going on in that video clip by themselves without humans, and then, you know, train, you know, their computer off of all these clips. And they'll do this like constantly. And he's like, what in the world? He was like shocked. He's like, and he's like, wait a minute. Like, what if the government tells, you know, gets data from Tesla of like where everyone's located? And he was just kind of freaking out a bit. But I'm I don't think you worry about that part. But the whole idea that a person following Tesla, not religiously, but, you know, from a distance, has no idea what Tesla's doing AI-wise. Yeah. It's just, it's interesting that I think the story of Tesla AI is still, like, under the cover. It's not being highlighted, right? Tesla still, even they have AI Day, it's just a small, tiny, tiny sliver of people who watch that stuff or even care about that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's going to be one of the most, I think, impactful technologies in the next decade with transportation and then moving on to Optimus.
It was really interesting because I am in this space and I make videos about this, but as you were describing that process, I was going like, that's crazy. Nobody does that. Right. So I was literally listening to you describe things that I already knew. And I was like, that just doesn't make logical sense. So I think that's the reason why. I think your friend is not an outlier. It's just that they're doing stuff that's so ambitious and so outrageous that it's just difficult to understand that somebody's actually doing that in the world. It sounds like science fiction when you talk about it.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, definitely. And then once Tesla solves FSD, people will be like, how did they do that, right? Because they weren't following it along the process, and it's gonna it's gonna be crazy. This FSD stuff, I think it's I like focusing on it even more during times where there's lots of noise, because if you have if you're needing Tesla to be at the stock price to be at a certain price in the next couple of years, yes, then a lot of the stuff does matter. But if you don't need it to be at a certain price the next few years and you're more dependent on the long term, then a lot of Tesla's future is going to be determined based off of their success or their failure on FSD, right? They're really betting a big part of their future on this and investing a lot.
Well, so, I mean, look at Optimus, the Tesla bot can't work without basically FSD. I mean, it's the robot version of it, but it also needs that to be functioning. Although honestly, I think that's an easier problem because it's not a 3,500 pound vehicle traveling at 75 miles an hour. Right. So, so I think it actually has an easier time, but a lot of the company's future depends on this software.
All right, John, nice chatting and catching up and talking about the future robotaxi platform, FSD status, and things going on. Go ahead, folks, check out John's channel, Dr. Know-It-All. You're at 45,000, but you're shooting for 50,000 subscribers by the end of the year. Is that the goal?
I don't know about the end of the year. That'd be lovely. If people want to subscribe, let's do it. I've got something in my mind for 100,000 if I ever get there, but I have to figure out something stupid to do at 50,000. So if anybody wants to throw out some suggestions, by all means. Anyway, we'll see. And in the meantime, you have fun traveling. It sounds like it's you're having a great time. So showing the kids the world.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes. Exciting place we live in, guys. All right.
For sure.
Okay. All right. Take care, John. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.